You're listening to The Job, a talk show about design, music, business, culture, Portland, etc., featuring interviews with interesting people, brought to you by Need More Designs. My name is Raymond Brinklip. Today is Monday, February 18th, 2013. This is episode number one. Stay tuned for our interview with Candace Brinklip, partner here at Need More, featuring advice for those new to the web design field and just starting out. Today on the podcast, I'm joined by Dan Manchester, web developer extraordinaire and a gentleman with a fantastic beard. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Ray.
How are you today?
Doing all right, thank you.
Excellent.
You?
Oh, good. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Yes. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, and we have a fresh pot of coffee. I should warn you that there's someone drilling in the ceiling over our studio, and we're going to be interrupted one time, but I'm not going to tell you when, for a delivery of fruit.
Wait for it.
Yeah. Stay tuned. Yeah, interesting. So, what are we listening to this week, Dan?
What are we listening to?
Do you have any, is there a track that's stuck in your head?
Well, I listened to the Wugazi mashup on the way to work this morning on the bus. That's
Wugazi.
What just, when I pulled my headphones out of my laptop, that's what was just playing. It's a Fugazi Wu-Tang mashup. That is amazing.
That's awesome. I
came out, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, a year ago.
Wow, I have to listen.
It's so good. It is so, so good.
Give me an example of something that they mashed together. Like, is it...
It's really heavy on, like, it's all the... There's a lot of 36 Chambers, the first Wu-Tang album. There's sure. a lot of that. And then a lot of the Instrument album.
Okay.
Fugazi, so, like, a lot
Excellent.
Of that soundtracky stuff.
Okay.
And, but there's also... there's a great version of Cream called Sleep Rules Everything Around Me, which uses one of the Fugazi songs rather than Cash. It's just so good. It's just so good.
Wow.
They're two of my favorite things. Just it's like peanut butter and chocolate.
I'll have to check that out. My musical tastes have regressed. I've been torturing the studio with 70s, so don't ask me. Although that brings up a good point, is that I know we mentioned this in our podcast last week, but that wasn't a real podcast, so I'm going to mention it again. But that I think we've definitely learned our lesson now, and we need to have records in the studio, and that's part of being a successful studio. So since sort of the theme of this episode seems to be advice for...
What was the lesson
right.
that was learned there?
No, there was none.
Okay. Without a turntable.
Just that records are pretty and that they force you to take frequent breaks because you have to flip them every 20 minutes. Ooh, that's it. And, you know, they've always got those little extras that CDs or MP3s just don't have. I feel like the extras are going away. We're all losing something in our lives.
I had a conversation this weekend about how much I miss liner notes.
Liner notes, right?
Like just, and I don't think about it too often, but then I, you know, find some new band that has been around for a while that I'd never really got into. I can't pull out the liner notes and like
just read the
figure
lyrics
out what they're into or look
right.
at the lyrics.
Yeah,
I mean, granted, I'm walking around with a computer in my pocket, but it's just not the same.
Yeah, I mean, and the computer, let's, you know, not sell it short. It's amazing,
mm-hmm.
but... Yeah, you end up also with the experience of, like, Googling for the lyrics to a song and coming to some awful place in the internet where horrible things happen.
Yeah.
You're lucky if you can make out
lyrics,
the
lyrics. Websites are...
They're, like, the worst.
Not where you want
to
be.
And what's up with that? Isn't that weird?
Yeah. There's that one rap genius that has the... It was started specifically for hip-hop lyrics that just got all that VC funding recently.
Oh, dear.
And they're going to expand into, you know, all genres, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really good.
Mm.
It's like annotated lyrics. So, like, anywhere there's an allusion or something in the lyrics,
right.
you can click on it and it has a little pop-up that gives you, like, specifics about it. I mean, it works really well for hip-hop because there's so many shout-outs and stuff in the lyrics. But there are no pop-up ads right. when you go there and you're not fearing for viruses.
Exactly. Yeah, you're not encumbered by overwhelming avalanche of advertising before you can actually peel off the layers and get to the page. Yeah,
there's not the ringtone flash player in the side.
Yeah, it's buy this ringtone. Okay, yeah. And on the subject of media, we do have a movie of the week, which was kind of required viewing for a client project, which was Rushmore. You know, and despite it being a Wes Anderson movie, it was pretty good. I'm joking.
Despite?
No, I love Wes Anderson movies, of course. And anyone out there hasn't listened to Rushmore, maybe we'll... It's a shame because I would quote Rushmore for the rest of this podcast, but I know all the only quotes that I know are all from Bottle Rocket. So,
really,
yeah,
is that your favorite Wes Anderson?
No, I just think it's just the oldest one. Yeah, so they've ingrained the most in my my memory. Yeah, so I got nothing there. This website being brought to you by Needmore, I should mention that we have a new website up. It's at needmoredesigns.com. You should check it out. We're trying an experiment where we're doing one of those really long web pages that takes you your whole afternoon to scroll to the bottom. And I feel like it's a nice start, but what we've decided to do is sort of roll out the website over the course of a year rather than force ourselves to make it in one sitting. I feel like we're on a good path. But enough about our website. Another thing that was suggested I bring up is the fact that we kind of had to start using Chrome. And I am an ardent supporter of... I'm a fond user of Apple, Mac sort of stuff. And so I've tried to keep a...
That is underselling it a bit. You are one of the more more ardent Apple supporters I've ever met.
Yes. Just don't say the F word. Fanboy. I was going to say fanboy. Okay. Yeah. So that's been hard for me. I feel like... I want to talk about that just for a minute. Like Safari has made some progress, but despite being the early leader in the field of, I guess you'd say, like KHTML or what's the web, basically WebKit rendering engine, it was kind of ahead of its time, and now it's sort of fallen behind a little bit. When I espouse the advantages of using a stock configuration, I always think of things like the fact that I find it really handy that when you have a page open on your computer, you go to your phone, if you have an iPhone, and you can get to that page very easily. It's stored in the iCloud. Like, you can get to your tabs that are open on all your different computers. Switching to Chrome is kind of a different world. There's sort of a different philosophy there. So I should say the reason that I've started using Chrome is because there's a lot of plugins for Chrome that one person will make that bring features that are really handy. For example, we've started using Harvest for time tracking, and Basecamp has never supported time tracking. So if you're using Harvest and you install the Chrome plugin, you actually get a time tracking feature within that web app. Same for Trello, which we're big fans of here. Suddenly you get time tracking features in Trello. And this is pretty awesome. There's a lot of stuff like this that sort of makes one thing talk to another, despite the fact that the developers themselves haven't bothered to do that. The drawbacks are mainly aesthetic ones, I think, for me. Something about Chrome that rubs me the wrong way. It's not a pure Apple experience.
Do you notice the browser Chrome that much when you're in a browser?
So do. Well, for one thing, a lot of times I find tabs distracting. Hmm. And on the Mac, you can tell Safari when there's only one tab open, don't show it. You can't do that in Chrome. The tabs are part of the Chrome itself. There's no view in which you don't see them. Are there other advantages to Chrome, Dan, that I'm not aware of over Safari?
Well, from a development point of view, the Chrome developer tools are amazing. You know, they're...
Why are they different? I can't tell the difference.
Well, I think primarily because Google has set up a team of, you know, like Paul Irish is on the developer tools team, and the guy who wrote Firebug, I believe, went to Google a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And he's on the developer tools team, and they are sort of leading that rush. And it is. Seems like every big release of Safari, like basically every time the new Mac OS comes out, it gets a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But incrementally, like the Chrome development tools are just so much, they're so easy to use, and there's so many things you can do with them.
So give me like an example of something that Safari can't do that I'm not noticing Chrome being able to do.
You know, I am so unfamiliar with Safari at this point in terms of development tools that I'm not sure I could. I know it's easy. It's really easy in Chrome to like add a new style declaration to an element, where or like you can. Oh, here's one. Mm-hmm. You can force a state on any element on the page. Like you can force a link to be hovered.
All right.
And that's really handy, especially with, you know, live reloading and stuff. If you need a certain state to be open, you know, you need a drop down menu to be open while you're looking at it and you're styling it in your text editor or whatever, you can just leave it that way without having to like play the put the mouse in the very right spot kind of game. So that's really handy, and it's a simple thing, but it's super handy. I'm sure there some of the network tabs and the, you know, the systems, you know, looking at how things load works a little bit differently in Chrome.
You know, sometimes I wonder if this doesn't come back to the, and I know that, you know, Steve is no longer with us, but it seemed like for a long time, a common complaint with Apple stuff was, well, if it's something that Steve uses, it's awesome. If it's something that he doesn't use, it's kind of was added reluctantly to, hold some place in the market to satisfy some feature of power users, but really they're just kind of going through the motions. And I feel like a lot of the development I've seen in Safari is more like, yeah, we've added this great, you know, reader and all this stuff. And, you know, Google has a completely different reason for making Chrome than Apple does making Safari. And yeah, they probably use that web developer tool all day long, every day. It's like, it's their Xcode is right. Kind of how I look at it, you know?
That's true.
Xcode 4 is actually pretty kick-ass, but that's because everyone at Apple uses Xcode. That's their environment, you know? So I guess you just have to know what the strengths are of these companies, and well, it doesn't seem like Apple has it in them to keep up on that. Okay. Well... Yeah, so I'll probably write more about that at some point here. The thing, though, like that was a common complaint with like iCal, or maybe it was just.
I imagine that's still a complaint with iCal.
It is, but it's like the Google Calendar is like just it's awful too. No one makes a good calendar. It's like the easiest thing to make. I've seen third-party calendars that were pretty good. Anyway, it'd be funny if Apple's stock widget started getting terrible because we don't look at our stock. But that's I'm just poking fun at Apple now. Yeah, okay. I really have nothing else to talk about. Is there anything else on your mind, Dan?
My mind is clear.
Okay. I'm going to go back to my musical choice, and I hope that all of our listeners will take the time to enjoy the greatest offender of my musical taste lately has been Nights on Broadway, which we just listened to by the Bee Gees, which you might know if you've seen the Barry Gibb talk show skits on Saturday Night Live, which we pulled up and watched here the other day in the studio, but that's the song they're making fun of. But the song is pretty awesome, so you should all go listen to that. So yeah, we'll see you again next week. Special thanks to Budos Band for the use of their fine track "Rite of the Ancients," our theme song, and enjoy the interview with Candace. Thanks. So I'm here with Candace Briglip, who is a partner at Need More Designs. Candace.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me, for pulling me from my desk 3 feet away.
It's our pleasure. So what is your role at Need More, and how long have you been at Need More Designs?
My role at Need More is officially, studio director? Is that my name these days? What do I do? I'm trying to figure out what I do, which is really exciting. So for a long time, I was the project manager, and I am no longer project managing, which leaves me open to exploring lots of other exciting things, like spending more time with clients and potential clients and talking to them about their goals and their stories and stuff like that. We'll see. It's a brave new world.
Excellent. And so you've been meeting with some aspiring designers and giving some advice. And that's mm-hmm. what I wanted to have you here today to talk about, is maybe
that's
some advice for some aspiring designers and maybe just freelancers and small businesses in general mm-hmm. relating to the web.
Okay. First of all, I have to say that I find it extremely impressive that people that are just looking to graduate with, say, web design degrees are reaching out to people like us and wanting to meet and asking questions. I think I've been doing this for 10 years, and I'm still get scared when I think of trying to approach somebody that I don't know to sit down and give me career advice. So just the fact that people are doing that to me is amazing.
So what do you think is so someone's coming to you and they're just out of school. Mm-hmm. What is the biggest, shortcoming in their education as far as going freelance or starting their own studio?
Well, it seems like most schools are really focusing on skill sets. Like, you know, there'll be a class in Photoshop and a class on Flash and a class on CSS or things like that. So they have all of these skills. And for instance, talking to a student about their Flash class, they were actually encouraged to make a shop in Flash. And when we started talking about, like, why would you make a shop in Flash, they had no idea, but their only goal was to, like, make something in Flash. There wasn't a lot of discussion about why you might choose that technology. So I feel like a lot of the programs are focusing on a class per technology or a series of classes, and when you leave with a degree, you understand how to technically use some of these, but you might not understand, like, the bigger questions you'd be asking about why I might use Flash or not, why you would not use Flash. And they're also leaving without any, from what I can tell, any understanding of the business of being a web designer, which is extremely important because, you know, the woman that I met with last, her teacher had told her that basically 80 or 90% of them would end up being freelancers. And so I asked her what sort of business basics they had for freelancing, and they had none. So we ended up talking about things like, first of all, I suggested that she always have a contract when she's working with a client. And that was one of those moments where she was, like, taking notes, like, hey, I haven't heard this before. Contract. That sounds interesting. You know, talking to her about having an idea about when you would get paid, certain milestones, that kind of thing. Like, there really had been no discussion of, if you're working with somebody, how much work do you do or not do before you get a first check, say, or how do you have that discussion with somebody? And so she was still kind of in that mindset of, yeah, I'll do this big project, and at the end, I hope they pay me. But there's no contract, and I don't really know how to send the invoice, and I'm not sure how to, you know, there's like all of that. And I feel like if you don't have that down, then it's going to be hard to be successful, no matter how good you are at design. And you can be the best designer in the world, but if you can't keep your business going, or you're not clear about what kinds of expectations your clients have.
So as a freelancer, I mean, I'm guessing that perhaps the people in charge of the curriculum are thinking that, like, freelancers would be working, like, for an hourly rate or something. I mean, do you think there's any need for them to have business experience or understanding?
Well, I think a lot of the freelancers are going out and they're meeting small business owners or, you know, artists or bands, and they're making websites for them. And they're really excited to have the work. And so they're not really thinking a lot about what they need to have in place to make sure they get paid for their work. I don't think the expectation is that they're going to work for someone else. And hourly rate versus flat rate, I don't even know that that's being discussed. I don't even think they're talking about, like, how to bill, what to charge, all of that. I mean, I feel like that's just this murky area that just isn't being discussed.
So if you're this person, you're just coming out of school and you're getting your first, let's say, paying gig.
Right.
What's appropriate? I mean, how do you demand money up front when you have nothing, no work experience really to show for that?
That's a good question. So something that that we did, and I'm not going to say that this is the best thing for everybody, but say when you're in school, before you graduate, but while you're looking to get experience, think about yourself and your business and your portfolio. And think about what you want to have is maybe, you know, 5 to 10 projects in your portfolio that you are extremely proud of, that you can say this exemplifies your vision, your design, what you could do for somebody with, say, a bigger budget. And maybe you do those projects at a slightly lower rate. Say, a local business that you're really into. So I'm going to do this for a little bit less than I plan to charge in the future, but then they need to give you complete creative control. And I think that we did that a few times when we were starting out as a mm-hmm. business, that basically we did take a little bit less thinking, but we did demand creative control. And so that went into our portfolio as a really good example of the kind of work that we do. And I think that we had to manage those projects really intelligently, knowing that there was actually a trade-off happening. Like, we needed to build up our portfolio. They needed a website. There's also making your own side project. So something that you're excited about or interested in that you can create a website for that does show your aesthetic. But I think that those need to be really well considered and not a habit, but something that you're doing, not the side projects. I mean, if you have a bunch of side projects that you're excited about, do them. But the kind of trade-offs where you're maybe asking for a little bit less in the beginning to build up your portfolio, I think those, I mean, this was 10 years ago, but I think that we had a goal of, you know, 5 projects that were outstanding, that we could really show off our aesthetic. And we really did work towards that. And then we had a great portfolio.
So I have another related question.
Would you say that someone should do that now, or is that? Was that when we were young and kids?
Well, I think that you have to have some way to show that you're capable of executing on that work. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a different kind of client who's going to take a leap of faith on someone who's never done a paying project.
Yeah.
But I think that's a great opportunity for a potential client, because let's face it, those are going to be some good rates probably, mm-hmm. versus an established 10-year-old studio, you know.
Right.
Recently, a website was built for a place called Fitness SF in the San Francisco area, and the designer of that site was based in Europe, or the agency who built it. Mm-hmm. And it transpired that they worked for what they claimed to be half a year without pay, and that they completed the site, put it up, and that the San Francisco-based business refused to pay them.
Cool.
The reaction of the design agency was to replace their homepage with a long message explaining their situation and to implore visitors to signify their protests on social media.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a good idea.
Why not?
Well, okay, so there are two things that I see as wrong about this, but this is the first time I've heard about it. Mm-hmm. But on face value, one is any other potential client that sees what they did for this client, this sabotaging their homepage and making very public this payment issue, you know, who's going to want to work with that agency if you treat your clients like that? Like, obviously, they're telling their side of the story. They basically took that client's platform and right. put their story out. And that is, I don't think that's something that should be aired publicly, personally. But, okay, so besides that, I feel very strongly that you should never complain about clients in public. You shouldn't tweet about clients in public. You definitely shouldn't start a campaign where everyone is getting frustrated with your client because they didn't pay you what you think they should. That's just bad business.
Right.
But that aside, it makes me wonder what they had in place that they worked for 6 months without payment. So, you know, we have every project, we have a contract
right.
that our clients sign, and they sign it and we sign it, and our contract states what we owe our clients and then what they owe us. So there are really definite times where we receive payment, and one of them is at kickoff. We take a third of the project as a retainer that's non-refundable. That allows us to set aside the right amount of resources for the project to get started working on the project. There's also a retainer that comes after mock-ups have been approved. And that's a very strong moment where we have the yes to go on and make the website. And then, you know, there's the final payment at launch. And so, but our contract also states what we will do for our clients. So it states, like, what they can expect from us, how many rounds of mock-ups, say, or, you know, there's a confidentiality piece in there. So we're saying that we're not going to talk to other people about their project. That kind of thing. It also says, you know, it basically, I think, just outlines the entire relationship. And so if something goes awry, it's really easy to look back at that and say, where are we in this and what are each of our rights and responsibilities? Mm-hmm. And it would seem to me that if you get 6 months into a project and you haven't gotten paid, I mean, if they had a contract in place, then they could probably talk to a lawyer about that lack of payment. But the fact that that particular firm is taking it to the internet and to people makes me think that there probably wasn't a contract.
Right.
And there probably wasn't a really clear outline of what the client was getting. And there was probably some communication breakdown where each side feels like they're right.
Right. And I, when I read about that, I thought, probably the designer was a little bit complicit in what happened there for the same reason I think that you noticed that kind of a red flag was spent half a year working and didn't get any money. I feel like not just to kind of protect you as a designer, but that getting some money up front sort of raises the level of discourse on a project. And I don't mm-hmm. feel like you can be taken quite as seriously until you do that, because your client isn't going to... It just gets harder and harder. If you haven't gotten any money, then it just gets harder and harder as a project goes on to negotiate from like a weak position sure. there.
And, you know, there's also that idea that if you don't ask for anything up front and you provide mock-ups, it's possible that unless you have a clear understanding of what that is, that someone could take those mock-ups and just have someone else make them and never pay you at all.
Right.
You know, there's nothing that really stops that. It also makes me think that we spend a lot of time thinking about whether potential clients are good matches for us. You know, whether we would work well together, whether our design aesthetic and our thoughts about what we want to create together are kind of on the same page. And that probably helps us quite a bit, because we aren't necessarily taking on projects where we don't believe in what we're making, and then 6 months down the road, there's like some falling out.
And there's a lot to be said for getting to know the business you're working with mm-hmm. before making that commitment, because, well...
So did they put up the website and then take it down, basically? Like, they delivered the entire project,
correct.
Didn't get paid, and then went on to the client's server and
correct.
Took
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
That feels like that's not even legal. I mean,
well, right. now,
contract
and
or
I'm,
no.
I'm
I don't
guessing
know.
That a lot of that was complicated by the fact that we're talking about an agency that specifically was based in Europe. I mean,
yeah,
who knows where?
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is that if you're a small agency and you've gotten no money, what kind of recourse do you feel that you have? Do you feel like you could pursue litigation? Probably not. You probably have no clue what your legal recourse is if you're in a different country. I mean,
yeah.
are you gonna fly out to California to appear in court?
So I would suggest not handing off a project until you'd received payments, like, you know, building the project
at
on
the
your
very
server
least, yeah.
and,
yeah.
You know, getting it to the point of, yes, receiving final payment, then
right.
putting the site up.
That
or
seemed...
some, I mean, you're saying that they hadn't asked for anything.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds
that
like they
is,
somehow put the site up on the client's servers. I don't know who controlled the server.
That feels like it's rolling the dice, and that client probably didn't really know what was expected of them either in some ways, you know?
And let's take a step back here. In general, I see things like this happen like once a month. I hear a story about...
Well, there's that website that...
Right. There's a website that sort of collects overdue invoices.
Which,
I feel like that lowers the perception of our industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of why I don't like that idea, is that I feel like a studio or an agency or even a freelancer is responsible for setting the right terms, making sure they're going to make both parties successful. And, yeah, I mean, you know...
You know, a really good contract is there. It's not just to protect you. It's to protect your client also.
Right.
You know, it's so that they do know what to expect. And then, you know, that's why you need to have a lawyer that makes sure that you understand the contract, that's written it for you, so that you're following what it says, you're doing what you say you're going to do. And, you know, if there's a potential issue about payment, then that would go to a lawyer, not to the general public. You know, that's something that I think that should be handled privately.
Getting back to the advice for sort of beginning
yes.
people. I think that... I'd be curious what your thoughts are on... So let's say that your portfolio is not your strongest suit, or you don't really have one. You have just
okay.
a few things, maybe all personal projects. You haven't shown a history of having successful working relationships yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what else can you do to gain the confidence of a potential client or find potential clients?
you know, intern, actually get some experience working on projects and seeing how an agency does what they do. I would think interning is a really good idea when you're a student, so that, you know, if you're ready to go when you graduate, or working in a studio for a period of time, if your goal really is to be on your own, mm-hmm. you know, working for another studio or interning for a while is probably still a really good idea. I mean, I did not do that. I think that we basically started our business and ran with it, mm-hmm. did a lot of reading, mm-hmm. and reading also, and learned a lot on the go. But I also think that a lot of those things that we learned, we probably could have learned quicker had I interned somewhere for 3 months and watched a project manager and talked through those issues, or having a mentor, someone that you can check in with. You know, I would say it's really smart as soon as you can to get all the support around you that you can. So getting an advisor or a mentor, mm-hmm. having a lawyer, even though that seems like a crazy thing to do at first, you know.
Right. And obviously, you know, your potential clients will look at your website.
Yeah. Having a great website and blogging, like just getting your ideas out there, you know, when you're thinking about what your philosophy, say, of web design is, writing about it, because every once in a while you're going to get a client who just comes to you because they happened upon something that you wrote about that resonates with them. They're like, yeah, I believe that too. That's the person I want making my website. You know, so I would say getting out there, using social media, blogging, whatever you can do to really get your point of view.
I think early on, one of the things that really helped us was our Super Bowl ad.
I do remember, though, when we first got started, we did a website for somebody on Hawthorne, right?
Sure.
And so we printed out postcards with our logo and like hand wrote messages and either sent or delivered them to every business mm-hmm. on Hawthorne. You know, I mean,
did we get a single client from that?
I have no idea. I don't think so.
We did.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
But I think that, you know, over the years we've worked with a number of people on that street, and who knows if that's the first time they heard Need More or not.
Could be.
You know, I mean, how many times does your name need to come up to a potential client before they think, you know, I've heard of them enough. I think I'm going to, you know, check and see who they are. I feel like there are a lot of people like that out there that...
There's probably people who need to hear your name 5 times before they do anything about it. And, you know, when I started out, I assumed that I had to do a lot of cold calling or something, but it turned out that was never useful. It was just... Mm-hmm. I think we would get most of our clients through referral and stuff.
Well, and that's the other thing is when you do have a client, treat them really well, and treat them well even when... the other people to treat well are the people that don't end up becoming your clients. Like, if we talk to a potential client and we realize that they are not the right person for us, the right match, the right project, maybe we don't have the experience that they're looking for, or that's not our focus area, I try really hard to connect them with someone who will be the right match and answer their questions. And sort of as soon as someone gets a hold of us, I think about them sort of like a client, even if we don't end up working together. So my goal is to either work with them or help them find the best person to work with. And there have been times later on down the road where someone who I've said, basically, we're not the right people for you, but I think this other person might be, they've gone on and worked with somebody else, those people will end up recommending us every once in a while, because they'll think, ah, I wasn't the right match, but, you know, you actually might be. Because I'll try to explain why. And some of it's just like a technology issue, or, you know, that's not necessarily our design aesthetic, but I know this other designer who could just, you know, knock that out of the park. That's really who you should be working with. That kind of thing.
So that's a form of marketing, really.
Sure.
Even saying no to someone in the right way.
Yeah, just treating them well and caring about whether they get, you know, handed over to somebody that is going to do a good job for them.
How do you handle a situation where you feel like you have a client, mm-hmm. and they're in a particular industry, and you feel like when someone is approaching you from that same industry that you have to say no to them?
Well, one, unless you've signed some sort of document saying that you won't work with other people in other industries, I don't think that you have to, but I feel like there are certain industries that are more competitive than others where it's kind of like that Mad Men thing where, you know, every studio has their car or their airline and you work with that car airline. I think that there are some industries where I sort of feel like if I've done a project, a big project for somebody in a particular industry, and a bunch of people come to me and I realize that they are coming to me to make their website because they would like to aspire, especially to be much like our client, it starts to feel like what they're actually looking for me is, how do they do this? What technology do they use? Mm. What do they offer people? And that's not something I'm going to divulge. And so that we are as a studio going to divulge. So I feel like there are particular industries where I only really feel comfortable having one client. I don't want to work with direct competitors. We try never to do that. Mm-hmm. And that allows us to really focus on our clients and give them the best advice possible and not hold anything back. And as a studio, I think it just lets us do better work. So sometimes you've just got to make decisions like that, even if it's not something that you've promised a client. Or it might not even be something that they're asking from you, but that you just know it's the best thing to do.
Have you ever been in a situation where you've asked a client that question?
I have, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not always clear to me who a direct competitor is.
Right.
And we don't always know our client's plans 1 year or 5 years in the future. Mm-hmm. 5 years in the future. So, you know, every once in a while, I feel pretty comfortable saying this opportunity came up. Especially if someone comes up to us and says, like, I am a great friend of this client of yours, and, you know, I'd love to work with you. They have good things to say. Sometimes it's not clear to me, like, whether that client has actually recommended us and would feel absolutely fine with us working on that project, or whether that's just kind of a segue into, like, getting to know us.
Right.
So I feel pretty comfortable. But when I've done that, I've actually said to the person, you know, I really wouldn't feel comfortable working on this project unless I'd checked with this client of ours. Do you mind if I let them know that we're talking? So I still give that person that same respect, you right. know? I mean, I think whether they're a client or not, once they've started talking to you, they're expecting you not to.
And does this extend to, like, let's say we had a client who was a restaurant, mm-hmm. ran a restaurant. I mean, technically they're competing with every other restaurant in the city.
Yeah. In some ways I think of restaurants in a little, I don't feel like they're one of those necessarily industries where, like, when I think about a restaurant website, it's pretty straightforward to me, you know, like hours, menu, Twitter feed. I think that as an industry, you could sit down and you could make a list of, like, what most restaurant websites need. And then past that, you're trying to get to know that individual person and what they're really passionate about. Is it, you know, a certain, like, really fresh local ingredients that change all the time, or is it a type of food? You know, it's like mm-hmm. the design is going to be different because they have a different story. And, you know, it's a lot like we started working with artists and musicians. That I think that was kind of our initial client base. And the one thing I really enjoyed is, like, well, if you think about an artist's website, you could probably make a list of, like, the pages an artist's website probably has. Mm-hmm. But the fun was getting to know artists and getting to know their aesthetic and figuring out how to make a website that really was unique and talked about them and their personality. And I kind of put restaurants in that category in my mind. Same with bands, you know, it's like, you know, they need tour dates and things like that. But every band is so different that the really what you're trying to do is make a website that gives off the vibe of like what their music is. So I guess I would put restaurants more in that particular category. Not to mention that, you know, oftentimes a restaurateur will end up opening more than one restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I doubt they consider themselves competing with themselves. It's sort of a... And restaurant websites are just fun.
Do you happen to remember who the car company was that the agency in Mad Men was working with?
No, I just remember, was it the car company or the airline where they had one that they were working with, but they thought they might get the bigger one.
Mm.
And so they were trying to figure out maybe whether they should drop the littler one so that they were open to getting the bigger one. Is this ringing any bells?
I'm trying to remember too.
So it made me think about that. Like, I would have a really hard time dropping a client like that. So the lesson I took away from that is you should try to work with the best person or the best people in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
Starting out, if you can.
Right.
Right.
It's like trying to buy the smallest house in the best neighborhood.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we end this conversation?
I recently read Design as a Job.
Sure.
By Mike Montero. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And I thought that book was fantastic. So I think if somebody was interested in some of the things that we've been talking about, that I would recommend that you go out and get that book and read it.
Cool. Thanks, Candace.
Sure. Thanks, Ray.